Daniel chapter 6, and let's begin reading with verse 7. All the presidents of the kingdom, there were three of those, this is Babylon, assembled together to the king and said thus unto him, King Darius, live forever. All the presidents of the kingdom, that was verse 6. The governors and the princes and the counselors and the captains have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. That's a weird sounding law, isn't it? But it made sense to Darius for whatever reason. I think it flattered him a little. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing, that it be not changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not. Wherefore, King Darius signed the writing and the decree. Now, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled on his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as he did aforetime. Well, we're talking about Daniel this morning. I'm thinking a little bit about a very special young person who lived to be quite old. And who all during that time, from when he's first introduced to us in Scripture, in the book that bears his name, to the time that he exited this world, I don't know anything bad to say about Daniel. Out of all that could be said about his life, everything that you read in the book of Daniel is praiseworthy of Daniel. I wonder what it would have been like to be him. I mean, here as you open the book in the first chapter, he's just a kid, you know. I mean, an extraordinary kid. Some kids are just special, you know. They just are. And Daniel was one of those special kids. He was about 16 years of age at the time this started to be written, and he was experiencing these kinds of things. And he should have been playing football on a Friday night, putting the helmet and the pads on and getting out, you know, and running through the stuff and having a good time, or marching in the band on a Friday evening and blowing a horn or beating on a drum. But he wasn't doing any of those kinds of things. And what happened to Daniel was not fair. Not any way, any stretch of the imagination that could say that this, you know, it's kind of, the way he acted and his parents acted is kind of no surprise. It was a hard deal when his world blew up in his face. Just 16, when the city in which he lived, which was Jerusalem, couldn't keep up with Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon, present-day Iraq, when they headed north and invaded. And so from Jerusalem, a lot of the stuff was taken, gold and stuff like that, and some of the best kids that were there. Verse 4, chapter 1, book of Daniel, children in whom was no blemish, but well favored and skillful in all wisdom and cunning and knowledge and understanding science, and such has that ability to in them to stand in the king's palace, whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. And so Daniel was one of those groups in that group. That was that kind of a kid. And he was one that early on, you've read the book and know the story of Daniel before, that when he first got there, he made a determination. When he and Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego and whoever else was in that group that he was with were taken aside from the rest of the children of Israel that were held captive by the brook Chebar, when they were set aside and brought into the king's palace to live in Babylon itself, and were educated in Babylonian schools and chosen to become leaders among the captive children of Israel, Daniel refused, and the others with him, refused to eat Babylonian food if it did not conform to the dietary standards of the law of Moses. He couldn't eat pork, and well, you know the standards. And so he said, listen, as he went to the guy that was in charge of them and said, let us just, you know, Aspenaz, the master of the eunuchs. And he said, let us just eat according to our structure and habits and law, and said, just check us out afterwards and see if we're not doing at least as well as everybody else. And so permission was given to do that. And, of course, at the end of 3 years of nourishing them that way, they were outstanding physically, mentally, quite some guys. He interpreted the dream in chapter 2. Nebuchadnezzar had the dream. You're familiar with his interpretation of that dream. I don't know how much time elapsed between chapter 1 and chapter 2 when Nebuchadnezzar had this dream that he couldn't remember, and when he sent for all of the wise men of Babylon to interpret the dream, to first tell him what the dream was and then tell him what the interpretation of the dream would be, because the dream troubled him a bunch. It was a statue and made up of different minerals and metals and things from the head down to the feet. Had something to do with the statue being destroyed by a stone, a little bitty stone that rolled down and hit it in its feet. And the stone grew and became a mountain and filled the whole earth. And Daniel interpreted that. Under the threat of death, all the Babylonian wise men were under the threat of death if an interpretation could not be given. And finally it fell back to Daniel to try and provide an interpretation when Daniel said, believe God can handle this. And so got permission to try to take a stab at it. He got the other guys together and said, y'all need to be praying for me that God will give us an interpretation of peace for this dream that he has had. And so the interpretation was given. Listen, all those Babylonian wise guys should have given Daniel a plaque in appreciation to Daniel for saving our hides. And he did that on numerous occasions by the power that God had given him to see, which other people couldn't see. Daniel chapter 3 deals with his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and their determination to be faithful, and even being cast into the fiery furnace. We've covered their stories many times. Chapter 4 takes back up with Daniel and back with Nebuchadnezzar, where he has another dream. I don't know how much time, again, has elapsed between these circumstances and chapters in Daniel's life, but bear in mind that time is going by. By the time we get over here to chapter 6, about 50 years will have gone by. So that Daniel's not 16 anymore. He's about 66 years of age when we get to that stage. So as time is going by, here's another dream in chapter 4 that Nebuchadnezzar has. And this is this big tree dream, you know, that's big branches and healthy looking tree, and all the animals come and you know, eat the fruit that falls from the tree and live under the shade of the tree, and the birds flourish within its limbs. But a watcher comes and says, let's just cut it down. And so the tree is hewn down. What are all those birds and animals going to do? I mean, they're just going to scatter, and who's going to watch after and care for them with the tree gone? But they left a stump there, and they banded it with iron and metal. And that was the dream. The stump just sat there. Got dewed on when the dew came. Got rained on when the rain came. Got beat on when the sun shone. And that was the dream. Daniel once again told Nebuchadnezzar the interpretation. And he said, you know, you're the tree. I mean, everybody comes and lives in your shade. And you provide sustenance for those that live in your shade. All the peoples that you conquered that are so dependent upon your power and your strength. But you're going to get hewn down. And all the stump tells you is this: what's left of you after the hewing occurs is going to be dewed on, it's going to be stormed on, it's the sun's going to shine on it, you're just going to be out there in the field and in the open. And so Daniel, in his interpretation of that, said, time will come. You're going to lose your mind. You're going to live like an animal out in the field. Nebuchadnezzar couldn't imagine that. He dismissed the dream of Daniel and went on about his business, ruling and governing and doing all the things that Nebuchadnezzar did, until finally he made that journey through his city of Babylon, one of the seven wonders of the ancient world, and all that he had built and all that he had done. And he said, after 12 months of that had passed by, verse 30, chapter 4, is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty? And while the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, you messed up. His pride and his arrogance. The kingdom is departed from thee, and they'll drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. And Nebuchadnezzar didn't want that. Sometimes in life we get what we don't want. And if you've lived long enough in life, you have come to experience the fact that sometimes when you get what you don't want, it winds up being the greatest blessing that God could have given you. Not always, but sometimes. And for Nebuchadnezzar, that was certainly so because of the pride that led him to fall. When he finally came back to himself, God gave him his mind back. I, Nebuchadnezzar, verse 37, chapter 4, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all of whose works are truth and his ways judgment, and those that walk in pride. Nebuchadnezzar was an old man, but he didn't know this until now. Those that walk in pride he is able to abase. Nebuchadnezzar dies. Listen, he's been a great king for a long period of time in Babylon. Now, it would happen there just like it would happen anywhere where you have a totalitarian system of government. And the leader dies. I mean, there's a squabble for who's going to take his place, and there's competition. There's one guy that gets the crown, and there's another guy that kills him later on and takes it away. And there's another guy that gets the crown, and somebody kills that guy. And so four kings come onto the scene of Babylonian history very quickly here in succession after Nebuchadnezzar has died. So that when you get to chapter 5, there have been four kings already, and the fifth king is called, verse 1, chapter 5, Belshazzar. He's the fifth one. And he's a grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. So you know not very much time has elapsed between here and Nebuchadnezzar's death. And we know what happened with Belshazzar. We know the feast that he gave, and we know the taking the vessels out of the temple that his grandfather had brought back, and his toasting the gods of Babylon in those vessels, and we know the handwriting on the wall, and we know Daniel's coming once again and interpreting what that meant and saying that this night, this kingdom is going to be taken from you, and history records because Daniel does not. Other than saying in verse 31 of Daniel chapter 5, in verse 30 and 31, that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain, and Darius the Median took the kingdom, being about 62 years old, about 62 years of age for Darius at this time. He came in having diverted the river Euphrates that ran under the walls of Babylon, those massive walls that could not ever be conquered. Gates so strong could not ever be conquered. There was no way for any army to gain entrance. But he dug the river out. Who would have ever thought about digging the river out and causing it to flow in a different direction than he and his men simply going in by the riverbed under those walls? Belshazzar died that night. This was a military strategy of the Medo-Persian Empire. Darius was the king of the of the Medes, and Cyrus was the king of the Persians. Darius also had the name of Gobryas, but most often known as Darius. And he was the king of the Medes. But once the Persians and the Medes joined up, Cyrus kind of took command of things, and Darius became a general under him, and oversaw and took Babylon, of course. And so chapter 6 comes about, and we got chapter 6 here now, and we got this thing where Darius, not a Babylonian, a Mede, you know, I mean, but he's ruling in Babylon now, and so he sets up a different structure of government, one that he was comfortable with, and he set over the kingdom, verse 1 of chapter 6, and 120 princes, over the whole thing. They were to govern the whole thing, and he set three presidents over this kingdom, and the first among those three presidents was Daniel. And the 120 princes accountable to the three presidents who were accountable to King Darius. And this Daniel, verse 3, was preferred above the presidents and princes because here's what Darius picked up on very quickly. And Daniel's a little bit older than Darius at this point. There was an excellent spirit within him. And the king thought, you know, he would be a good one to put over the whole thing. Save the salary of two of these presidents, let them go, and just let him have it all. Well, political competitiveness couldn't tolerate that, and so the other presidents and the princes who feared the power that Daniel had with the king sought to find an occasion to bring charges of some kind against Daniel. Just know this, they had been watching Daniel. As much as people watch you as God's children and understand that you have a relationship with God, they were watching Daniel, looking for something that he did that they could use against him, to make accusation against him. But they could find nothing. Verse 4 says, none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. The circumstances that had come into Daniel's life came because they were not under Daniel's control. He didn't just decide at age 16 to be orphaned. I don't know what happened to his parents, and he probably didn't either. He didn't decide to go into captivity. But he could decide this one thing. And he did decide this early. He could decide in all the unfairness of life that he would be faithful to God. Pretty good decision. And in all the things that come into your life that are unfair, if you've made that one decision, that you're just going to be faithful to God, things have an amazing way of working out. And so that's what Daniel said. I mean, he was faithful. And they understood, we'll not find any occasion against this Daniel, verse 5, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. And so they put their unholy heads together and they said, we can do it this way. Because they knew about Daniel's prayer habits. They knew what kind of man he was and his devotion to his God, this Jewish God. We're going to have to find it in something dealing with his law. And so they talked to Darius about this business, about this decree for 30 days. And Darius was going to be used. Later on, when he came to figure out that he was being used, he got a little upset. But they appealed to his pride and his vanity and in this law that nobody can make any kind of request of any man or any god other than you for 30 days. So what's Daniel going to do? Bear in mind this thing about Daniel. He never let himself forget who he was. Regardless of all the things that kept swirling around him, he always knew he was not a Babylonian. He was a child of Abraham. He was a son of God. And to the best of his ability and strength and understanding, he would live his life in Babylon as God's son, as a citizen of the kingdom of God. And not just of Babylon. I am reminded by Daniel that I need to not get too comfortable here. It's in the book of Hebrews, the 11th chapter, that the Hebrew writer said this about some of the faithful of old, verse 13. He said they all died in faith, just like Daniel did. Not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off and were persuaded of them. The promises persuaded them of this reality, that they should embrace them, and they confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. And so are we. Well, this is Daniel. Quite a guy. Making some very impacting decisions. This was just, this was one out of a bunch of laws that governed the Babylonians. But the way it was with the Medes and the Persians, which wasn't the way it was with the Babylonians, was that if they made a law, and if the king signed the law, I mean, nobody could change it, not even the king himself could change it. I mean, it appealed to their arrogance, Because to admit that we made a law that doesn't need to be changed or that needs to be changed, the king would have to say, I made a mistake. And no king can make a mistake. And so that was just their law. But, kind of as a fallback position, they gave a lot of their laws a graveyard clause. Because just in case we did the unthinkable and made a stupid law, it at least wouldn't be over us forever. We can see the end. Well, this law was given a length of 30 days. So what is Daniel's response going to be. Well, we read it in verse 10. When Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem. He kneeled upon his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. I looked in the Old Testament trying to find where windows had to be open in order to pray. And bear in mind, windows weren't windows like we think of them, you know, glass stuff that folks can see in. If you closed a window in that day, you closed a window. Made it, shuttered it. So you obviously couldn't see in. But Daniel kept his windows open when he prayed, and folks could see in. But no law required that. It's just that Daniel, when he thought about how am I going to respond to this law, what would be the right thing to do? You know, sometimes the right thing to do is absolutely nothing. I had an old superintendent that always put that to us every time that we had administrative meetings and we'd talk about an issue that needed a decision needed to be made. He said, now, you know, you understand that this is always an option in our consideration. Do nothing. Daniel did nothing about the law. Daniel just continued to live his life as he had always lived it, as if there were no law. It didn't impact one way or the other on the way he would conduct his life or the things that he would do or not do. This business about praying three times a day, whether the windows open or not open, was a Jewish custom and tradition dating from way back yonder. But God's law didn't say anything about, you know, three times a day. Daniel could have left his windows closed and continued praying and not violated any law of God. Daniel could have just dismissed his praying for a little while. Have you ever gone a day without praying? Be careful, you're in the church. You know. Daniel could have just put it off, you know, and done different than what he normally did. But he just continued on just as he had always done. Didn't seem like he was looking for some justification to do other than what he had always done. I wonder if I would, having never walked in Daniel's sandals, having never faced an environment like he faced, or a challenge like challenged him, I don't know how I would respond. If some national emergency required the United States government to say for 30 days, there'll be no public assemblies. We're under martial law and everybody remains in their house. What would we do with the gathering together of the church? A decision would have to be made about whether the doors here would close. Elders might email everybody and say, you're going to have to worship in your own house on your own time, under your own leadership. Would we look for some justification to enable us to comply with the law of the land and not run any kind of risk of some $20,000 fine on the first offense? For Daniel, it just simply didn't affect him. I mean, he just continued on with life, how life is to be lived. I'm just reminding us that this was as he did aforetime. I'm reminding us to keep our windows open, to keep our prayer life going. Regardless of what force or set of circumstances seem to suggest that we needed to do less or other than that, it's critical what habits you develop, what your life has been about aforetime, what your custom has been, Acts 17 in Paul, and his custom was to go into synagogues every Sabbath day and teach people from the Word of God. And Jesus' custom on the Sabbath day, Luke chapter 4, was to go into the synagogue, forming good habits is really important. How, you know, we know how habits are formed. You ever bite your fingernails? I used to bite my fingernails all the time. I did that because of John Lloyd. Some of y'all knew John Lloyd, and some of you didn't. He's my first cousin, but was before he passed away. But John Lloyd started doing that at an early age, and I saw him chewing on his fingernails, and they were just down to nothing. You know, I thought, well, you know, I wonder what the deal is with that. So I started trying it, and I found out what the deal was. Oh, you know, you keep your mouth active, and so I chewed my nails for a year or two or so, or maybe more than that. I used to chew on my shirt collar, as Anna can tell you, and I have more than one school picture with a soggy collar on it because I chewed my shirt collars. Something about me and my mouth, I don't know what it was, and chewing, but you know, I got in the habit of doing that the way we get in the habit of doing anything. I cracked my knuckles for a long time because John Braden did it on the bus, and I liked the sound. And so I did that. Ceaseless repetition. Doing the thing over and over and over again so that it becomes a part of our very nature. So that we can do this without purposely having to think about it or making any conscious decision about it. It just becomes a part of who we are. Listen, this was a part of who Daniel was. And there wasn't anything that Babylon could do to change who he was. So he continued to pray just as he had always done. He didn't seek to negotiate. Didn't meet with the king behind closed doors and say, hey, you may not have thought about how this bears with on me. Didn't do any of that. He just went on back home. And when his hour of prayer came, and he prayed as he had always done. We have to watch out negotiating with the world, bargaining with those that live lives contrary to the will of God. Because whatever bargain we strike, whatever negotiation is negotiated, if we're not careful, we'll come up on the short end of that thing. And God will be made more remote in our lives. So, Daniel just did what he always had done. Daniel didn't, and he didn't, let me remind us of this, we're about to run out of time, but Daniel didn't, he didn't just freak out. He didn't just, he didn't try to marshal every Jew in the in and around Babylon and say, it's time for us to march. You've seen this law. It's time for us to get active and do something about that, and we need to go and take our prayers down to the Babylonian courtyard, and we'll all pray together out there in the courtyard. And they'll see our strong stand, and they'll know that we're not people to be messed with. And he didn't do any of that. Faith is not our Christianity. It's not a sideshow. It's not a circus where we're putting on an act for somebody. Not if it's really us. Not if it's who we are. Daniel didn't flaunt temptation. He didn't dare people to catch him doing what he had always done. He just did what he'd always done. Lead us not into temptation, Jesus taught us to pray, but deliver us from evil. And God never has led us into temptation, James said in James 1, verses 12 through 14. God doesn't tempt any man with evil. But we do a lot of stuff ourselves. We blunder our way into temptation after temptation because of foolish decisions that we make. And that's always a tragedy. Daniel prayed. Last point. The prayer is not recorded other than just this generic statement about his prayer. He gave thanks before his God. Here he was, 66 years of age, knowing that he was going to the lion's den. Knowing exactly what the politics that was going on with this deal, knowing that they'd be watching him to see if he prayed, he just did what he had always done. But he knew in doing that that the lion's den was a reality. That was the execution method of the Medes and the Persians and the Babylonians. You just kept the lions hungry. He prayed and he gave thanks. Separated from Jerusalem, he hadn't seen it in over half a century. Whatever relatives and kinfolks he hadn't seen them either. Under threat of death, if he continued faithful to God, he prayed and he gave thanks. I'd like to see his give thanks list to exactly what it was that he was so thankful for, that he would risk his life in order to express it to God. I'd like to have a heart of gratitude like that for all the good things that God has brought into my life or has brought into your life too. To express thanks. Let that be our habit. Keep your windows open. Don't negotiate with the world. Determine in your own heart that above all things you will be faithful to God. Life will work out. We're going to sing a song of invitation. If you're here this morning and not a Christian, we invite you to come in obedience to the gospel and repentance of sin and confession of your faith. We'll baptize you this morning into Christ for the remission of all of those sins. You may need our prayers as God's child. We stand ready to assist with that as well. We'll sing the first and last stanza. You come while we stand and sing.